Maybe I'll you know, I had decided to continue the discussion of preparing for the time of death, but then with, you know, the beautiful weather and sort of thing, why do we have to think about that? Let's enjoy a little bit. We can think about that when we're older. Then I thought, well, maybe to lighten up the mood, I could see if anyone has any good jokes about death.
About the good weather, we died under Mirage. Whenever it was nice out,
he'd
go, "Oh, Maya's out today."
I have a good joke about that.
You won't tell it?
Would you like me to tell it? It's not a spiritual joke, is that right?
As long as it's funny.
It's clean, but it is funny. This woman, you know, her husband had died, and they were up in years, about 80 years old, and her husband loved his black striped suit. He said, when I die, I would be buried in my black striped suit. So he died, and she gave the instructions to the, the undertaker. So she came early for the funeral, for the viewing, and she got there, and it was one of those funeral parlors that was very big, where they had two funerals at the same time. So she got there early to view with the family, and she was first, and she noticed that he didn't have his black suit, he had a brown suit on. So, you know, she wanted to honor his last wish. So she immediately got nervous and went to the undertaker and said, "You put on the wrong suit." And he said, "Oh, Mrs. Jones, don't worry about it. Just give me a few minutes. I'll take care of it." So he rolled out the coffin, moved it into the other room, and he was acting like 5 minutes. And she said, "How did you ever change that suit in 5 minutes? He looks great." She said, "Mrs. Jones, I didn't change the suit. I just changed the head."
That was a bit...
It wasn't about to save them. It wasn't about that.
Well, it was close. She prayed, and then...
This is a Rukmini joke.
Yeah, it's a Rukmini joke. Her son...
I don't feel good.
Well, anyway, her son, she's a Jewish lady, and her son is drowning, and she's praying to God, and then the son is washed back, and she's rejoicing, and then she looks, and then she says to God, "He had a hat."
Yeah, she wasn't grateful. In other words, she wasn't seeing the donut; she was seeing the hole.
It wasn't the hole.
Well, I thought of one, but it was a while ago. I don't really remember the details so well. But husband and wife die, you know, they're in their late 80s or whatever, and they go to heaven. And the weather's beautiful. You know, skies are blue, not too hot, not too cold, nice breeze. And the husband can play golf all day long, and it's free. And there's free drinks and food served by attractive young ladies at any time. And he's really enjoying he's really enjoying. And he says to his wife, Ethel, if it weren't for you and your bran muffins and steamed tofu and broccoli, we could have been here 20 years ago.
Well, that reminds me of a joke. It's a very similar joke, except the person, he goes to Satan comes and says, well, you know, why don't you come visit before you make your choice where you want to go? And so he goes to hell, and there's a pool, and there's beautiful ladies serving drinks, and he's going, wow, this is really nice. Boy, Satan, you get a bad rap up there, you know? I mean, this is like really, really nice here. And so Satan says, well, you could stay. You want to sign up? And he goes, yeah, I just might do that. I mean, this is beautiful. This is like great. We'll sell you drinks and everything taken care of. So he signs up. And as soon as he signs up, these two ugly guards come and grab him. And they take him and their pitchforks and they're throwing him in the fire. And Satan walks by and he goes, Satan, what happened to the pool and the drinks and the beautiful ladies? And he goes, oh, that's just for the guests.
Well, mine actually has a purport. I'm sure they all do. And the purport is that we try to, you know, prolong our lives as long as possible. But that what awaits us could be better than what we have now. And in the case of a devotee, that could very well be true. However, devotees are interested only in service. So it's like that. Jivo va marova, doesn't matter if you live or die. And, for a devotee, heaven and hell and liberation are the same. So that should really be our mood in pure devotional service. But we can have that mood when we're actually situated in pure devotional service. Srila Prabhupada described, well, it's there in the third canto, but Srila Prabhupada described it very vividly, that someone in devotional service but influenced by the mode of ignorance will think, I'm the only real devotee. Nobody else is doing anything. And one influenced by the mode of passion will think, I want to be known as the best devotee. I want to be the best devotee. I want to be famous as the best devotee. Someone influenced by the mode of goodness will think, I want to go back to Godhead. And someone who's transcendentally situated will think, I just want to serve Krishna. Now, to be situated in the mode of goodness is good. It's good. To give up the desire to stay in the material world and enjoy in favor of the desire to go back to Godhead is good. But it's not perfect. Perfect is, I just want to serve Krishna wherever he wants, however he wants. And in that consciousness, one won't be afraid of death, and one won't desire release from the body. One may desire direct service, that's something else, but not release from miseries of the body. But that is natural, to have that desire. And to make a plan to get out of the body, go back home, back to Godhead, is intelligent. And as Janava Mataji mentioned, Tamal Krishna Goswami's statement in relation to Mother Kirtida, that she deserved the death she had, that she died as she lived in Krishna consciousness and in the mood of selfless service. It was very appropriate. I did happen to hear a lady give a talk about hospice care, and I think she was quoting some authority to the effect that one should die with dignity, and by that definition they mean one should die the way one lived. And she told the story. She had actually experienced it. A man, I think it was from Cuba or somewhere, some Latin American country. And in his last days, he would go out to the shed in his backyard. And it was the rainy season. He would just sit in his shed. Or maybe he would sit on the steps under an umbrella. And it seemed like a very odd way for him to be spending his last days. It turns out that he had been like a revolutionary, like a freedom fighter somewhere in Latin America. And so during his days as a freedom fighter, he would often be in a shed in the rain. So I thought, that idea of dying with dignity, I mean, yes, we want people to die with dignity, but the definition of dignity is the way they lived. I think it would really depend on the life they lived. I mean, that was sort of pathetic in a way, just sitting in the rain thinking about the revolution. She told another story. I don't know if I can remember it. It was about a priest who would often speak about death in his sermons. But when the time came for his own death, he was really very irritable and morose. And it seemed that he was afraid of death. I don't remember the details, but she spoke with him. It wasn't exactly that he was afraid of death, but he had a lot of doubts. I don't remember the details, but it's like under the surface, even though he gave so many talks, but under the surface he had doubts about what he had been preaching. He wasn't sure. He just wasn't sure. And he felt he'd been preaching for so many decades, and he had all these doubts when it came down to it. But I think it is true for a devotee that if he lives his life in Krishna consciousness, then he'll leave his body in Krishna consciousness. And that should be our effort. And as I mentioned in the morning, quoting Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's two instructions to chant the holy names and serve the devotees, which includes, of course, the spiritual master, the previous acharyas, the whole disciplic succession. And, you know, we talk about these two ingredients, our hard labor, Parishram, and Krishna's mercy, Krishna Kripa, the two coming together, and that Krishna is bound. I would like to speak a little more about, well, both, but the selfless service leads to the mercy. Like what Tamal Krishna Goswami said, that he was afraid that if he was busy serving and then if death came, he wouldn't be able to think of Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada said that Lord Chaitanya will, you know, forcibly enter your mind. So I think there are some illustrious examples of devotees in ISKCON. Mother Kirtita is one. During her last days, His Holiness Keshava Bharati Das Goswami Maharaj was staying with me, and we both had relationships with her. And after she left, we were like discussing what could bring a devotee like her to receive so much mercy and attain such an exalted state of consciousness. And his answer was selfless service. I mentioned a few others, and he thought the common factor was selfless service. During our little break, I compiled some things from my computer. One was something I used to listen to every morning. Srila Prabhupada singing the prayer Krishna Tudya Padapankaja Panjarantam and giving a little purport to it. So I thought I would read it. I think this prayer really, when Srila Prabhupada arrived in Vrindavan, you know, for the last time, that and he spoke about his own imminent departure. When he retired to his room, he recited this verse quietly. Krishna Tvadiya Padapankaja Panjarantam Adyaiva Me Visatumana Sarajahamsa Prana prayana samaye kapavata pitai kantavarodana vido smaranam kutaste. My dear Lord Krishna, I pray that the swan of my mind may immediately sink down to the stem of the lotus feet of your lordship and be locked in their network. Otherwise, at the time of my final breath, when my throat is choked up with cough, how will it be possible to think of you? And then here's what Srila Prabhupada says. This verse was sung by King Kulashekar, a great king, but at the same time a great devotee of the Lord. His songs are recorded in the book known as Mukunda Mala Stotra. It is a very famous book. It is sung by many devotees. So it does not matter whether a man is a king or a poor mendicant. Everyone has the facility to become the greatest devotee of the Lord. He is praying, "My dear Krishna, your feet are lotus." Generally, we say lotus feet. Where the lotus flower is, the white swans, they come to the lotus flower and try to play with the stem. They sport going under the water and become entangled with the stem of that lotus flower. That is their sporting. So King Kulashekar is praying, "Let the swan of my mind immediately enter into the network of the stem of your lotus feet." That means he wants to engage his mind on the lotus feet of the Lord immediately. There is no question of delaying. He says, "Now I am in sound mind. If I think that I will think of your lotus feet at the time of death, there is no certainty. Because at the time of death, the whole body becomes dislocated. The whole function becomes dismantled." And Prabhupada gives a nice little description of what happens at the time of death from the Ayurvedic point of view. Then he says, so death takes place when these three elements, kapha, pitta, and vayu, overlap with one another. And the symptom is that there is a sound in the throat. Grr, grr. That means the patient cannot speak. The throat is choked up and he becomes suffocated and dies. This is the last stage symptom of the body. So King Kulashekar says, "I cannot wait up to that time when everything will be topsy-turvy. Now my mind is sound. Let me die in the sound condition of my life so that I can think of your lotus feet." That was one nice point that Anadi Krishna Prabhu made. In level one, he was grateful that he's in sound condition. He has a voice that can speak, he has a tongue that can pronounce, he has ears that can hear, and he has a mind that can function. He's grateful for that. So King Kulashekar is praying, "Let me die in the sound condition of my life so that I can think of your lotus feet." Now here's the purport. In other words, he's giving us lessons that if we do not practice to engage our mind on the lotus feet of Krishna when our mind is sound, how will it be possible to think of him at the time of death? So, that's the purport. We have to practice now. We have to practice now because we don't know when death will come or what condition we'll be in. So we have to practice now so that our mind will be attached to Krishna. Maya Satta Mana Partha, that first verse of the seventh chapter, the verse that Srila Prabhupada spoke on more than any other verse. Mind should be attached to Krishna. Now, the next one, oh my gosh. Most of it's missing. Well, maybe it's Krishna's arrangement. Yeah. Well, okay. Well, not that okay. Huh? I don't like reading from computers, but I could. I should have looked at this earlier. But anyway. I guess I'll just read one more piece because it's by a devotee who was in New York in the building just across from the World Trade Towers when the airplanes crashed into it. And a little bit after that, I was invited to Visalia, where there were a group of devotees, and they asked me to speak about it, like so many people were so shaken by it, and they were shaken and their faith in God was shaken, and so they wanted to know what they should say to people. So I spoke, and then at the end, I mentioned this devotee who had been there, and she was present. The devotees wanted to hear from her, so I introduced her. This is Varshavanavi Devi Dasi. She works for Merrill Lynch in Johannesburg. Her organization offered her a course in New York City to help her develop her skills as a financial analyst. And the Merrill Lynch building is just across the street from the World Trade Center. And she speaks. Just before the incident took place, there were police sirens that were unrelated to the World Trade Center attack. So I heard these sirens, and I looked at my watch, and it was 8:50 a.m. Then she thought, you know, in South Africa, she hears these sounds all the time, and, you know, there's so much crime and violence there. So she was thinking, oh, this reminds me of South Africa. You know, I'm glad I'm not in South Africa. I'm in America. Everything is safe here. Within seconds after that thought, we all heard a huge bang, and the building we were in just shook, literally shook. At that stage, I was thinking that it was an earth tremor or an earthquake, something like that. Then the lecturer mentioned that this sounded exactly like the bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993. We were stunned, but we still didn't know what was happening. Then a few of our tutors ran into the auditorium and said that a plane had crashed into the World Trade Center. We all thought it was an accident. We didn't consider that it could have been a terrorist attack. So we went to the next classroom. Many of my colleagues went to the window, and I also went. The World Trade Center was within our vision, and flames were coming out of the building. The airplane was in the building already. and it was just horrific. Many of my colleagues were hysterical. Many were crying. Personally, I was just shocked. I was just stunned. When the flames were coming out of the building, I was thinking, there's so many people suffering in there. A year ago, I had an accident with fire. I burned part of my feet when hot oil fell onto them. It was extremely painful, so I could only imagine what they were going through in the building. Then we saw people jumping out of the building. I remember one person in particular. He wore pants, shirt, and tie, and his tie was flapping. It was really horrible. Actually, many of those who had jumped out were trying to stay afloat. They were flapping their arms. I was thinking, oh, Krishna, please help them. We were witnessing this whole incident, but we were completely helpless. So I was praying, please help them, Krishna. About 15 minutes later, I saw the second airplane, and it was so deliberate. I was thinking that this was evil. The second airplane flew around the corner and just entered the second building. Everyone screamed. Until then, everybody thought it was an accident. But when the second came, we knew that it was no accident. We were next to the building and we were high up. And I was thinking, I could die at any moment. There could be more planes coming. I must start chanting. Now is the time. Now is the test. But I couldn't chant. I was numb. I walked up and down the lecture room thinking I have to chant, but I couldn't. There was a colleague of mine named Patrick from Brazil. He was sitting down and praying. I really admired him. He had his hand on the table and his head on his hand, and he was just praying. And I was thinking it didn't matter whether he was a Jew or a Muslim or a Christian or whatever, but he was praying at that time. Then the building supervisor came and said, I don't know what's happening, but you are not safe up here. Better come down. At that stage, we were on the 22nd floor. Everybody, although they were in shock, was very orderly. No one panicked, everyone kept their cool, and we walked down the stairs. When we got down, there were people all over on the ground floor. Outside there were huge crowds, police vehicles, ambulances, fire engines. Now when I think about it, those first fire engines, all those firemen gave up their bodies. There was chaos outside. I was thinking, better just stay inside. If I'm going to leave my body, then I'll just stay here and chant the holy names. Before doing that, I thought of my parents. I phoned my brother and told him what happened and that I was safe. Everyone was dumbfounded and aimless. I took my chanting beads and sat on the floor, and I was just chanting. It felt good. And one of my colleagues came up to me and said, it's really not safe here. We should really get out of here. He took me out. I was going to stay put and just chant. And outside was complete chaos. Anyway, she describes the chaos. And in the end, they went to a hotel. She describes how many people were just coming in and taking shelter of alcohol. And then, oh my God. Then a man came. 15 minutes later, a person who works for Morgan Stanley in the South Tower of the World Trade Center. He had been on the 63rd floor and had managed to escape. When he came there, he was really shaking. He was around my age. He said, I was right in the building. Then he told his story. When the first tower was hit, most of the people in the south tower started evacuating. But there was a message on the intercom that they should return to their desks. He said that there was no way he was going to stay. And something inside him told him to just keep on going. When he was walking down the staircase, he saw a fat lady, and she was having a heart attack. There was another lady who was pregnant. I felt very upset and asked him what happened to them. He said, I don't know. I just kept on going. Something inside said, keep on going. I don't know if they made it or not. After that, New York was just not the same. The whole vibrant mood was gone. One or two days after the terrorist attack, there were many bomb threats. I don't know who it was, whether the same organization or just pranksters. We were staying in mid-Manhattan, and it was 10:30 p.m. I was taking rest. All of a sudden, we heard the hotel siren, and the hotel people told us to evacuate. For me, it was the last straw. I was thinking, what more? It was very intense. I was in my nightwear. I was thinking, this is too much. So we had to walk down the stairs again. And we were walking outside. I felt so alone. I felt really alone. And I just had my beads. And I was chanting. I was just chanting and crying a lot. At that stage, I was thinking, it's just Krishna. It's just Krishna there. Srila Prabhupada used to say that you should chant as though you're a helpless child. It's the first time I experienced that. I had only the holy names. I didn't even have proper clothing. I didn't have anything. Just my japa beads and the holy names. Then we walked down. All the people in the area were walking, and many of them were crying. I think it was too much for everyone. I also had a few nightmares regarding the incident. In 1 week, I had 3 nightmares. But one nightmare, in retrospect, when I think of it, taught me a lot. I don't know where I was, but there was a creature coming towards me, trying to kill me. I was trying to defend myself as Draupadi initially did. You know the story of Draupadi? I was throwing objects at the creature, but it wasn't working. The creature was coming towards me stronger and stronger. Then I stopped throwing things at it and just started screaming, Krishna! Krishna! And this creature stopped and laughed. He said, you do not know Krishna, and walked away. When I turned, I saw my spiritual master standing next to me. Now when I think of it, it's true. I don't know Krishna. Well, anyway. This is her. I do not know Krishna, but I have my spiritual master who knows Srila Prabhupada and Krishna. From the experience, I learned a lot. To be more dependent on the Vaishnavas and to take shelter of the holy names. I chant so mechanically. This incident taught me to focus on the holy names and chant with feeling. Hare Krishna. So, this realized experience. I think I will read this excerpt from Mother Sangeeta. This is about mercy, about Prabhupada's mercy as it manifest when she was taking care of Prabhupada's disciple Mula Prakriti at the end in Vrindavan. I guess this was meant to make me overcome my reticence to bring a computer in the classroom. Prabhupada never read from a computer. Rupa Goswami never read from a computer. This was actually her talk on his disappearance day in Houston. Oh yeah, I'll read this first. I'll just read that part. It's so vivid. It also gives a sense of how we can help others leave their bodies. Some of you know that I do hospice nursing. I take care of terminally ill devotees. In June, I received a phone call from my godbrother, Gopa Vrindapal, whom I had not seen in 25 years. We had served together in the Los Angeles temple in the early 70s. He was married to Mula Prakriti Dasi, my god sister, who was very famous for many things. One of her great legacies was teaching the devotees how to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books. She opened up the Los Angeles airport, and she was one of the first to do big books at the airport. She pleased Srila Prabhupada very much with her service. In June, I received a call from her husband, Gopa, who told me that she was dying of cancer. He said that the doctor had given her 1 month to live, and would I please come to Vrindavan and help her and care for her while she was dying. When something like this happens, you just know that it is Srila Prabhupada wanting you to do this service. There is no other way to take it. Within a week, I left and met them in Amsterdam and helped Gopa to get his wife to the Dham. It was very emotional for him, but it was also very difficult physically to get her there. She was very, very sick. And she describes how the devotees rallied and were taking care of her. Then she comes to the point. Right before she left her body, she looked at me. She had not opened her eyes in 2 weeks, but she opened her eyes, and it was very clear communication. She could not speak. Her breathing was very, very difficult. For 2 days, 42 hours, her lungs had been filling up with fluid. And she had that death rattle, as it is called. It is like gargling. It was amazing that she could even open her eyes. She opened her eyes and she was communicating something to me. She was air hungry And she was in anxiety because it was just so difficult for her to breathe. I turned to my god sister, Vrindavan Vilasini, and said, "She is in so much anxiety. Please say something," because they had been close, dear friends for years. I knew that she would find a way to calm her down. So Vrindavan Vilasini felt so inspired by Srila Prabhupada at that moment that she went close to Mula's ear and said, "Mula, just surrender and Srila Prabhupada will breathe for you." And immediately Mula Prakriti just calmed down and she was focused again on Srila Prabhupada. Because she had said just a week before, everyone had been reading to her different pastimes of Krishna and Radharani, which were wonderful pastimes. But she said to me, "That is not my mood, Sangeeta." I asked, "What is your mood, Mula? Do you want to hear about Srila Prabhupada?" She replied, "Yes." And I asked, "Would it be okay if we read Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita to you?" And she agreed, nice, with this big smile. The famous Mula smile. Vrindavan Vilasini, our god sister, knew exactly what to say at that time. To surrender and Srila Prabhupada will breathe for you. Then we bathed her with Radha Kund water. I just had this feeling that she was going to leave within a few minutes. And I wanted her nicely prepared to greet Srila Prabhupada. For the last 2 weeks we had kept telling her, "When Srila Prabhupada is ready, he will come for you. You may think that you are ready, but he knows when you are ready. And when he is ready, he will come for you." So I had this feeling that it was going to be that morning because of her symptoms. Actually, the night before, I had prayed to the painting of Srila Prabhupada over her bed. The devotees were chanting in her room, and I prayed, "Srila Prabhupada, please come for her." And I just had this feeling. I knew that Srila Prabhupada was communicating to me. "You cannot summon me. You cannot summon me. When I'm ready to come, I will come." So it taught me a lesson in patience as well. That morning I bathed her in Radha Kund water and got her dressed. We decided to sit her up so she could breathe more easily. We propped her up with pillows around her. And she immediately said to her daughter, "Get your father and your brothers, get them right now," because it looked like it was time. There were maybe 5 women in the room. It was amazing how Krishna arranged that some of the devotees who were closest to her, who most wanted to be there at that time, were unable to be present. But this handful of women were able to be there and witness this great event. So we do not know how we can plan for these things. In the end, Krishna makes the arrangement. Who is there and who is not there to witness such a thing? Anyway, I was holding her up, and her daughter ran and got her father and one brother. I was chanting in her left ear the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and Vrindavan Vilasini was chanting in her right ear. Her husband walked in, and when he saw her condition, he immediately rose to the occasion to perform his last duties as her husband. He was amazing. At that moment, he detached himself materially. and knew just what to do for her spiritually. He had a silver tray already prepared with auspicious items. He placed Tulsi and Charanamrita in her mouth. I said, Gopi, we need Vrindavan dust. Gopa. I said, Gopa, we need Vrindavan dust. He handed it to me, and I sprinkled some in her mouth. Her mouth opened and quivered, which is an auspicious sign that she was going back to Godhead. And you could just feel the presence of Srila Prabhupada in that room. We had said to her, Srila Prabhupada will come for you when he is ready. Those words will always stay with me. I do not think I really understood what I had been saying until that moment. But Srila Prabhupada came for her. You could feel his presence in the room. In fact, I felt that the room was very crowded. There was so much going on at the same time, holding her up, trying to hear her heartbeat and feel her pulse, and at the same time chanting in her ear. It just seemed like the room was very, very crowded with many great personalities hovering above. It was very crowded. It is hard to explain. I looked up for a moment from all the things that I was doing and saw only a handful of women at the foot of her bed. But there were great personalities there to help her on her journey. And Srila Prabhupada was definitely there. There was no doubt that he came for her. It was a glorious moment. It felt as if the room had opened up, as if the whole sky, the material sky, had opened up for this one jiva to leave this material world and go back to Godhead. We were all crying because, of course, we would miss her personally, but we understood that there was this great kirtan going on the other side, in Krishna Loka. There was this amazing party happening. And that Srila Prabhupada was there in his true form. She was so fortunate that she was getting to see Srila Prabhupada in his spiritual form and that he was reintroducing her to Radha and Krishna. So it gave us some solace at that moment. We were crying and laughing and crying and laughing. The emotions were just running. It was such a transcendental event. It was Srila Prabhupada's lila, and I felt extremely grateful to Srila Prabhupada for allowing me to take part in it. Anyway, I mainly wanted to share that story because it is so clear that Srila Prabhupada is still with us. Srila Prabhupada once told Indradumya Swami that when we go back to Godhead, quote, I will stand in the middle, and Krishna is on one side of me, and you are on the other side of me. And I will take Krishna's hand, and I will take your hand, and I will join them together. So this is going home, back to Godhead. And I just want to encourage everyone that if we just continue with this process, continue to follow Srila Prabhupada's instructions, continue just to hang in there through the trials and tribulations, Srila Prabhupada will give us strength to get through it. He will give us the words when we need them. He is everything. His mercy is all that we are. So when we relate to each other, we can understand, you are also Vaishnav. Please accept my obeisances. He's talking about how we should see each other. You are representing Srila Prabhupada as well. Everyone is a representative of Srila Prabhupada if he or she is following his instructions. I do not want to speak of Srila Prabhupada as being only in the past. I get very disturbed when I hear devotees speaking of, quote, when he was here, end quote. He is here. He is here. Of course, we miss his personal association. We miss his association tremendously, and that will always be there. And then she says, she recalls when she got the news that Srila Prabhupada had left. And she was, at the time she says she was selfish. And she thought, what is going to happen to me? And I thought, what is going to happen to ISKCON now that he is not here? Now, after all these years, I'm asking different questions. I'm asking, Srila Prabhupada, please tell me what I can do for you for the last part of my life. This is like the sprint at the end of the race. And I just pray to him all the time. He has given me a mission, and for that I am extremely grateful. I do not know what else to say. Srila Prabhupada is here. He is with us, and he gives us guidance. Please have faith and pray to him, because he did not go anywhere. He is still with us spiritually. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. So, it's like what Srila Prabhupada said, that, well, he was quoting his Guru Maharaj, that we shouldn't try to see Krishna, but we should act in such a way that Krishna will want to see us. That means we just dedicate our lives to Krishna consciousness, chanting the holy name with attention, following the regulative principles, serving the devotees, and the mission. So that Srila Prabhupada will, and his associates will, want to see us. Well, they're always seeing us, but they'll want to bring us back to them. And the main thing is to chant. Chant with attention. Chanting with attention does so much. We've all experienced it. Yesterday, towards the end of my rounds, I was looking at that picture of Krishna embracing the cowherd boy, Gopakumar, just thinking, so, Krishna's so loving. There's so much love there. I mean, the cowherd boy loving him and Krishna loving the cowherd boy. It's like, what a beautiful place to be. Selfless service and love really go together. We engage in selfless service, but that is how we show our love. And even if our love isn't fully revealed, it helps our love to come out. The chanting, after the 64 round day in level one, I thought, well, I should go to more japa retreats. But this time I thought we should just have continuous japa retreats. You know, 2 days in between to fiddle around, do what we think we have to do, and then get back to the real business.
At level four, it's
residency. Yeah. And then I actually toyed with that idea, like what you were saying, to have like 1 day a week. Mm-hmm. Or, well, you do it as far as possible. Yeah, I mean, on every level, things, so many things that were unclear become clear, you know. And your mood is just feel love for Krishna, feel love for the devotees, just. But this service of preparing ourselves for death and helping others is also preparing ourselves, that's something that really involves every aspect of our life. To act in such a way that Krishna will want to see us, or act in such a way that Krishna is pleased to give us his mercy. But helping devotees leave their bodies, I think it does come up. It will continue to come up. And it's something that we should take as a very sacred duty that's extremely beneficial for us as well as the person who's leaving and the devotees and family members attached to the devotee who is leaving. It's a very sacred space. Somehow a very sacred space is created when a devotee leaves. It's just different that process of the soul disengaging itself from the body and moving on, it creates a very sacred space. You can feel it. On a practical note, I would suggest that devotees read Sangeeta's book, The Final Journey. One point she makes, this is a practical point, but very important, that every devotee should have a living will. You know, when I heard the story of Ruchi Rangada, and how it was only because her son happened to come that the devotees were able to meet her. Otherwise her family would have kept them away. I thought, she was lucky, but we really shouldn't take chances like that. And in the case of Janani Vasini Radha, I actually spent time with her in Houston, and I would speak to her on the phone when I wasn't in Houston. And we can see a higher arrangement. I have no doubt there's a higher arrangement, but in terms of how she felt, she was really missing the devotees. and her family members, they were of that type who thought that, you know, this is the work of the devil. This is the work of the devil, and they really wanted to keep us away from her. And she was living right in the devotee community. They wouldn't let us in. They wouldn't let the devotees in. And so a lot of this can be avoided by having a living will. It's well worth it. I mean, you know. But no doubt, you know, her Dhanani Vasini Radha's departure was auspicious, and Prabhupada was there. You know, the quilt was there and the tape was there. But on a certain level, it was very hard for her because she really wanted the devotees to come. And even though her family knew it, they still didn't let the devotees come, because when you have that mentality, like, you know, they really wanted her to whatever, go to heaven or whatever, and she didn't want, you know. They were thinking, she doesn't know what's good for her. So, you know. So anyway, living will.
We would probably do the same thing.
Sorry?
We would probably do the same thing.
I would say that pretty much everything that you get in any other religious group, you get in ISKCON too, in some form or another. Yeah. Of course, you get things in ISKCON you don't get in other groups, but you do get everything else as well, pretty much. Yes.
I have a question that something my husband and I have talked a lot about. You know, a lot of devotees have passed, and I truly feel some of them have definitely gone back to Godhead. But I think sometimes, you know, it's almost like we automatically think any devotee who leaves their body, oh, they went back to Godhead. But it's you know, this is like it can take lifetimes. And one of the things that I think about is Prabhupada saying that our children's children would be pure devotees. And so a lot of times I think that, well, there are probably devotees who have left their bodies and are coming back to finish up. So maybe can you say something about that? But I don't want it to become like just a cliche that, or that we take it lightly, that, you know, if I perform devotional service, I'm guaranteed to go back to Godhead in this lifetime.
Like your friend at the funeral,
right? Yeah, the Christians, they just automatically think anyone who dies goes back to heaven if they remember Jesus. And I just don't want us to, you know, come into that kind of mentality. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know Prabhupada said different things, you know, like, you know, we have to be completely free from sense gratification, and then he said, okay, 90% free, and then 80%,
then
okay, 70, that's it.
But
they're still, yeah, that's a big
thing. Yeah, 70 is a pretty high stage. 70 is a pretty high stage. There's a lecture in which Srila Prabhupada spoke on the verse Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. And the what's that word? What's the last line? Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Bhakti.
Bhakti Bhavati
Naishtikim. Yeah. So the translation is that by, you know, regular attendance in the Bhagavad Tam class or by serving the pure devotee, all that is inauspicious in the heart is destroyed almost to nil. And that verse really describes the stage of nishta, that the anarthas are destroyed almost to nil. And in one lecture, Srila Prabhupada said 75%. So, you know, the stage of nishta comes like after anartha nivritti. It's a pretty advanced stage. We shouldn't take it lightly. I don't think we should assume that we're going back to Godhead. Srila Prabhupada said most of his disciples would go to heaven because that's what they want. They want to enjoy a heavenly standard of life. And when I first joined, I was told that he had said, in response to the question, you know, will all of your disciples go back to God? And he said, no, only the ones who are most serious. So I think the real question is how sincere and serious we are. We may not be, I mean, it's a process. It's a process. And I think the real essence is to make the effort. I really feel if we make the effort sincerely, Srila Prabhupada will help. You know, our spiritual masters will help. It's like we quoted the other time that you should work as if everything depended on your effort, and you should pray as if everything depended on God's mercy. But But again, really, that desire for liberation, that's also not... The real desire should just be to serve. But I did want to mention something more, especially because I think Sudevi mentioned that line from Gopal Guru's description of the meanings of the Maha Mantra. Do you remember?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, was it someone else? Would you like to read that again? Did everyone hear that? Now this question arises because even this verse, Krishna Tudiya Pada Pankaja Panjarantam, uses the word smarana, remember you at the time of death, remember your name at the time of death, because it's sort of hard to chant in an audible way at the time of death. And you know, Ante Narayana Smriti, the perfection of life is to remember Narayana at the time of death. So what does it mean to remember? Even when I spoke at the San Diego hospice, I spoke about that, remembering Krishna at the time of death. They asked, what does it mean to remember Krishna? And last Sunday, mother, Kamalini, asked this question, but I didn't actually answer it because, I don't know, I didn't feel I could answer it then. But she had read in the book about Mother Kirtida, servant of love, that I had taken care of Mother Archaviggraha at the end. She wanted to know what it was like. And I spoke about Mother Archaviggraha and about what had happened at the end, but not so much about me per se. And then she said, well, you know, you told her about her relationship with Krishna, and you also read to her and spoke to her, and you didn't tell us anything about that, but that's all right, because time for prasad, and it's, you know, it's like a bit. So she mentioned that point, which I didn't really discuss in so much detail. Really, the initial change came from His Holiness Bhakti Bringa Govinda Swami Maharaj, who was living next door to her. The two houses are next to each other. And so we always hear this, you know, think of Krishna at the time of death. Remember Krishna at the time of death. But what does it mean to think of Krishna? It seems sort of vague. Now, of course, so she asked that question to Govinda Maharaj, and he thought about it that, you know, if you don't really see Krishna in terms of his pastimes, you're not really remembering Krishna in the fullest sense. And then, too, what pastimes? There's so many pastimes. You know, like... And then he just decided to tell her about Madhurya Ras. Now, yesterday, I really wanted to find the verse, said Krishna Nama Charitadi from the Nectar of Instruction, that one who's afflicted by the jaundice, you know, the sweet names are bitter, but if one continues to chant daily, then gradually one will be cured of the disease. One will be able to taste the sweetness of the holy name. And that verse was, you know, recited by Shyamala Sakhi in level one, and with so much realization after the 64 round day, I just wanted to read it. But I opened the book and my eyes fell on a line, and it really struck me, because I was just opening the book, it struck me that my eyes fell on that line. But I was intent, you know, I was looking for verse number 7. But still I thought, what was that line? I mean, that was very unusual, the way my eyes focused on that line. So I thought, I should find that. So I found it. And when you read those two lines of prayers to Srimati Radharani, it reminded me of what I read yesterday. And it made me think in those terms, thinking of Krishna at the time of death. Well, we could think in this way of Krishna at the time of death, or praying for service, we could pray for this service. The reason I would hesitate is because it's very individual. You know, everyone has his or her own attraction, and usually we don't have much attraction at all. And if we're lucky enough to have some attraction for Krishna at all, it might not be that specific. And so, but this particular purport is a little specific. But it doesn't. Not everyone will be in that mood. I mean, we'll be lucky if we have any mood. But it is the mood of those prayers. So I thought I would read it. It is stated that a devotee will at once develop pure love of Krishna in the wake of the gopis if he once takes a bath in Radha Kund. Srila Rupa Goswami recommends that even if one cannot live permanently on the banks of Radha Kund, he should at least take a bath in the lake as many times as possible. This is a most important item in the execution of devotional service. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes in this connection that Radha Kund is the most select place for those interested in advancing their devotional service in the wake of the lady friends, sakis, and confidential serving maids, Manjaris of Srimati Radharani. Now this next line seems quite living entities who are eager to return home to the transcendental kingdom of God, Goloka Vrindavan, by means of attaining their spiritual bodies, Siddha Deha, should live at Radha Kund, take shelter of the confidential serving maids of Sri Radha, and under their direction engage constantly in her service. This is the most exalted method for those engaged in devotional service under the protection of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In this connection, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur writes that even great sages and great devotees like Narada and Sanaka do not get an opportunity to come to Radha Kund to take their baths. What then to speak of ordinary devotees? If, by great fortune, one gets an opportunity to come to Radha Kund and bathe even once, he can develop his transcendental love for Krishna, exactly as the gopis did. Now there are some general principles here. It is also recommended that one should live on the banks of Radha Kund and should be absorbed in the loving service of the Lord. One should bathe there regularly and give up all material conceptions, taking shelter of Sri Radha and her assistant gopis. If one is thus constantly engaged during his lifetime, after giving up the body, he will return back to Godhead to serve Sri Radha in the same way as he contemplated during his life on the banks of Radha Kund. By serving Radha Kund, one can get an opportunity to become an assistant of Srimati Radharani under the eternal guidance of the gopis. So this is the process of you know, we think of serving Krishna in the spiritual world, and then at the time of death we go to Krishna and serve in the same way as we contemplated during this life. Now, I think that different devotees in ISKCON have different services to Krishna, have different relationships with Krishna. One of our god sisters who left her body in Scotland, Balabhadra Prabhu's wife. Yes, Mother Ratnaranjani. I believe she was in the mood of a mother, in like Vatsalya Ras.
Is that the book that he wrote? She was making Krishna. She was like a maid servant of Sarvani, in Madhuri Ras. Yeah, she was coming and helpful. She had a little, you know, like a little gopi form, and she would come and she would help make Krishna lunch. That's what was in the book. That was her meditation.
Oh, okay.
Same. From Ireland.
Scotland.
Your husband wrote it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that. I had heard that she was cooking, but I understood it was more in. But that's fine.
Yep.
That's very good. That's very good. That's very good.
It's in our line.
Yeah.
And she had a name too. I don't remember.
Yeah, I've heard of other devotees when they get near the end, like things are revealed, and not necessarily prominent devotees, but not excluding them either. But, but it's like we always say, like Prabhupada always says. We talk about love of God, but how can you love someone if you don't know him? So, like other religions, they talk about God in a vague way, but they don't have a clear conception of God. But from Srimad Bhagavatam, we know, you know, his name, his address, his mother, his father, his friends, his all details about him. And therefore, developing love for God becomes a practical reality. And we can learn about him by hearing, you know, reading. And I know of many of our authorities are cowherd boys also. There's a story in Jiva Dharma of the uncle and the nephew who they have the same guru, and at a certain stage of their purification and reading, one of them is naturally attracted to Madhurya Ras, and one is naturally attracted to Sakya Ras. I mean, this is very advanced. We don't even need to go through this process. That's another thing which I could mention. But so the one approached the guru. And he said, you know, he's very attracted by hearing of the service of Subal in assisting Krishna tend the cows. So you would like to be a servant of Subal. And from that day, his spiritual master manifested himself to that disciple as Subal. And then the nephew, you know, he said he's attracted to the pastimes of Krishna with Radharani, and in those pastimes, Lalita Devi is very prominent, so he would like to be an assistant to Lalita Devi. And then from that day on, his spiritual master revealed himself to him as Lalita Devi. So the same spiritual master revealed himself differently to the two disciples. Jiva Dharma. It's really a wonderful book. So we should read about Krishna. One of the devotees in level one mentioned how Srila Prabhupada wanted us to read the Krishna book every night before we take rest. And, you know, if not the Krishna book, then some other book with the pastimes of Krishna. I mean, the Krishna book is wonderful. Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Because that's how we get a sense of, you know, we talk about remember Krishna. It's not in isolation, in a cloud, you know. Mother Archana Siddhi gave the exercise, like think of someone you love, the name of someone you love, and then what feelings come when you say the person's name, or even see the person's name. Well, I'm sure if we do that, and think of the person, we're going to think of everything. The person's form and qualities and pastimes. If it's someone that we've known personally, we'll think of things we did together with the person. So that's remembering Krishna at the time of death really means Krishna in his abode with his devotees engaged in pastimes. So I think that was a wonderful program that Srila Prabhupada gave us to read the Krishna book at night, and it's a wonderful instruction that we received in level one to read something with Krishna's pastimes every day. And then we'll get attracted to that realm, and our attention will be diverted there rather than here. I was told that Srila Prabhupada said that if you read the Krishna book, then everything that happens during the day, you'll remember the Krishna book. I experienced it for a few days at least. It was like that. You just be absorbed in Krishna. It's like everything that exists in the material world exists in the spiritual world. So if you're always thinking of the spiritual world, And whatever you see in the material world will remind you of the spiritual world, because everything is there. I was going to say, except for mosquitoes. That's what I had heard, that there's no mosquitoes. But then I heard there are mosquitoes, but they don't bite. So. So are there any questions or comments?
Did Prabhupada say that most of his disciples would be in either the Madhurya or the Raja?
Well, most of our acharyas I've heard are either in Madhurya or Sakya.
If you want to be in
they emphasize Vatsalyaras more. But Lord Chaitanya had he had a few devotees of Lord Ramchandra. Mm-hmm. One was Murari Gupta, the physician. But he was also a devotee of Lord Chaitanya. And he told him that, you know, if you want to worship me and stay in the association of my devotees, you can do so. But you have to follow exactly the same way that the other devotees do. But internally, he saw Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Lord Ramachandra. What I had always understood is that because all of the elements of the other rasas are included in Madhurya Ras, that if you worship, you know, in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then even if your constitutional position is not in Madhurya Ras, but you will achieve whatever your constitutional position is, because all the elements of the other rasas are included in Madhurya Ras. I mean, it may be that if someone is more inclined to Vatsalya Ras, might go to Vallabha Sampradaya, but if one follows Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what I understand, he can realize his ras, whatever it is, with whatever form of Godhead. And there's also a very special feature about Lord Jagannath, which is that he will appear as whatever deity his devotee wants. Because when Gop Kumar, you know, he gradually went further and further, and eventually he reached Dwarka. And in Dwarka, even in Dwarka, he didn't feel completely satisfied because he was missing his Gopal. And Narada and Uddhava, you know, being as intelligent and perceptive as they are, they approached him. They said, you don't seem completely satisfied here. And You know, he didn't want to really say, because everyone there was so much in the mood of Dwarkadish. He didn't want to seem like he was had any disrespect or lack of love. But anyway, then Narada said, you should go to the abode of Lord Jagannath. And Lord Jagannath will manifest himself as Gopal, because Lord Jagannath has the feature or the quality of manifesting himself as whatever deity the devotee wants. I sometimes will even see pictures of him, like with the elephant trunk, like Ganesh. That actually goes back to one pastime that took place during Snanyatra. A devotee, I mean, very staunch devotee of Ganesh, you know, in the old days, traveled, I guess, by foot all the way to Puri. He didn't really have a clear conception of who Jagannath was, and he was expecting to see Ganesh, because his worshipable deity was Ganesh. And so Lord Jagannath and Baladev and Subhadra manifest that form. And it's like not only are all incarnations included in Krishna, all the demigods, you know. So the idea is that Lord Jagannath, he manifests the truth of the statement that all incarnations and demigods are included in Krishna by manifesting whatever form the devotee wants to worship. So Narada advised him to go to the abode of Lord Jagannath, and he would, and Jagannath would manifest himself as Gopal. Then Uddhava said that whatever Narada has said is absolutely right. I agree completely with what he has said. But, in my opinion, if you go to Boma Vrindavan, Vrindavan on earth, and worship Gopal there in the mood of separation, your intense feelings of separation from Gopal experience in Boma Vrindavan will carry you to Goloka Vrindavan faster. By worshipping Lord Jagannath, you'll get the same result. But by worshipping Gopal in the mood of separation in Boma Vrindavan, you'll get the same result faster. And so he did that, and that in that separation, mood of separation, he, you know, was so eager, he eventually left the material world and ended up in Goloka Vrindavan, embracing Krishna, being embraced by Krishna. But the reason I mention Lord Jagannath is that in most temples, Srila Prabhupada, I mean, that's the standard altar, Gaur Nitai, Radha Krishna and Jagannath. So, you know, I mean, it's true they're all included in Krishna, but especially Jagannath has that quality of manifesting himself in whatever form the devotee wants to worship. So I would say that it would include any form, any mood of service.
Yeah. In Puri, also the Buddhists worshiping as Buddha.
So yeah.
All the different people think Jagannath is our Lord.
Just a little thought. one disciple in the early days asked Srila Prabhupada, does Krishna have only 16,108 queens? And Srila Prabhupada replied, oh, you want to become one of Krishna's queens? You can pray like that. But it's really becoming the servant of the servant. I mean, we're not going to become one of the 16,108 queens, but we can become... and that came out in that example from Jiva Dharma. And it also came out, there was a story that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was touring South India, and there was a Ram Bhakta, it's like very famous, and so, you know, so many devotees were coming to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and saying, you know, this is Saram Bhakta here, and he knows only Ram, and he's only chanting Ram Nam, and they thought he was a realized soul. So, I believe Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur met him, and he asked him, is your relationship with Ram direct, or do you serve him through one of his associates, such as Lakshman or Sita or Hanuman? He said, no, direct. And afterwards, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur commented that he may be a pretender, because we don't serve directly. We serve as the servant of the servant. And even Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, although he came in the mood of Srimati Radharani, but he was often in the mood of a maidservant. Like the one pastime, he saw Chatak Parvat in Puri, and he mistook Chatak Parvat for Govardhan Hill, and he started rushing towards the hill as fast as the wind, and you know, the devotees were following him, and then when they found him, he was in that in state of internal consciousness. He described that he had three stages of consciousness: Baya Dasha, which means external, and Antar Dasha, which means internal, and Ardha Baya Dasha, which means literally half external. So he was in internal consciousness, and you know, the devotees, because his ecstatic symptoms were so extreme, it was very painful for them to see his body. So they wanted to, like, you know, get him out of his internal state. So they would, you know, they would chant and sprinkle water on him and everything. And then he would come to Ardha Baya Dasha, half external consciousness. And then he would say, oh, why have you brought me here? I was at Govardhan Hill, and I was hearing Krishna play his flute, and Radharani was there, and they went into a cave together, and one of the gopis asked me to collect flowers for them. And I was collecting flowers for them. And then suddenly you all made a tumultuous sound, and you've taken me away from them. And I had a chance to serve Radha and Krishna, now you've taken me away. So that in that mood, he was doing the service of one of the maidservants. He was tasting that mellow, that service. And then like he noticed some of the elders were there, like Paramananda Puri, and then he came to external consciousness, and he became very shy about the way he had spoken in that half external consciousness. So It is there. But there's a verse, I wish I had memorized it, but by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, basically says that we approach these topics very respectfully and from a distance. We never feel ourselves qualified, to enter into such service. But we respect the devotees who render such services from a distance. And we feel ourselves unqualified and unworthy, and we accept the position of the servant of the servant, like the last in the line. And we're not like eager to rush into some intimate service, but we feel we're unworthy of such a position of service, and we just feel like very lowly and fallen, and we act as the servant of the servant of the servant, everyone's servant. And so yeah, in his own last days, he would recite this prayer, Nijanikatani Vasadehi Govardhan Tuam, praying to Govardhan Hill to grant him residence. Sort of like that we reside at Govardhan, and from Govardhan worship Radhakund, like from a distance. And Srila Prabhupada also in his last days had the idea to go to Govardhan. And Govardhan fulfills all desires. Santa Barbara.
What's the story behind?
let me complete my last thought, which is that the special, of course, Govardhan fulfills all desires, Sarva Bhishta Pradatta, and he witnesses Krishna's pastimes in every rasa. Like some, it's sort of like that because some rasas don't mix well with others, like Vatsalya ras and Madhurya ras don't mix, I mean, obviously. So, a Govardhan witnesses all the pastimes and all the rasas. And during the Govardhan Leela, when, you know, Krishna sent, I mean, Indra sent torrents of rain and hail and wind, and Krishna lifted the Govardhan hill. So all the devotees of all the rasas were together, and they were with Krishna continuously. Talk about like something that seemed to be a reversal, being good. It's like they got to be with Krishna continuously, like without any separation for 7 days. So, yeah, Govardhan. You know, I guess all the... yeah, so all the places, yeah, all the holy places are in Vrindavan, all the incarnations are in Krishna, all the rasas are in Madhurya ras, so anything that anyone wants they can get